You are listening to the Experience Points podcast for the week of July 17th, 2019, and grab your rose petals, bust out your Barry White. It's time to make some Mario.
Welcome back to the Experience Points podcast. I'm George Albor.
My name is Scott Juster.
We're the co-creators of ExperiencePoints.net, a serious but not humorous conversation about video games. And that conversation, what, last week? We were talking about summertime?
Summertime, fummertime.
We said we would make a Mario Maker levels. We did exactly that. And we're here to just talk about Mario Maker in general.
Oh, man. Mario Maker 2.
I love this game. Beyond, like, I'm gonna pretend I don't even own the fucking game. I feel like personally comforted knowing Mario Maker exists.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. Because it feels like a great democratization of something that is pretty much universally recognized, right? Like, everyone knows who Mario is. It's just so well known. And everyone knows the basic idea of what a Mario level looks like. And for a lot of people, like you and I, we could probably map out the first level of the very first Super Mario Brothers with startling accuracy.
I should probably try to I should try to just make level 1-1 in Mario Maker and see how close I get. It's like drawing a freehand map of the United States, like see how close you can
get. You're going to forget like Idaho and stuff for sure, but it'll be somewhere in the jumble. You'll get the basic idea.
Yeah.
So to me, the idea then that we're going to take those tool sets and sort of give them to people and see what they make, there's no doubt in my mind, even if I were to never see a level, that people would come up with some creative shit. Lo and behold, actually being able to play people's levels, people come up with some crazy shit. It's pretty amazing.
Totally. I mean, it's the sheer amount of it. It's like a 100 monkeys and 100 typewriters type situation where it's like you'll just find some incredible stuff because there's so many people hammering on the same tile set.
Yeah.
And then also just the idea that you can test out your own stuff and then contribute it. It is a comforting force, as you say.
Well, and it's also inspirational, right? Like, you will play a level where you'll see an interesting mechanic or an interesting theme or the way that someone thought up an idea and then sort of brought it to life that then makes you think, oh, that's interesting. I wonder if that's something that I could apply to my levels, you know?
Yeah.
Like, at this point, I have maybe 4 to 6 different Mario Maker levels in progress. And most of them are just basically proof of concepts or tests, right?
Yeah,
I played a level where the on-off blocks would automatically switch so that if you have perfect timing, you seamlessly make these almost incredible jumps, right? Because the wall opens up or closes right at that perfect second.
Yep.
And so the idea of like blocks that automatically let you through once you activated something is super interesting, and I've started like tweaking around and messing around with like little tiny little versions, none of which would really make a fun or compelling level in and of themselves, but altogether have taught me a lot about just how that particular little mechanic works, you know?
Yeah. And the fact that it is a sequel, you start to look at what did they add to it, and the additions to this game are, I just think, like, across the board, they're very smart in terms of just depth of existing Mario mechanics.
So what are some of them? Because to be honest, I don't remember most of it.
So if I recall correctly, like, anything with slopes is brand new.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
So it's like 45 degree angles, new feature, 45 degree angles.
Yeah.
There are things around some of how the items are laid out. And well, actually, I guess I should start even like bigger picture. I mean, some of the my favorite parts of it are the little quality of life improvements where, you know, if you want to increase the size of a Goomba, instead of having to like drag a mushroom to it, you can just press and hold down and a little mini menu comes out, and it's like, okay, what do you want to do? Do you want to put wings on this? Do you want to make it bigger? Do you want to put a parachute? And it's like that sort of stuff is just a clever way of implementing things that a lot of people were doing anyway and just putting it into the workflow, which I really liked. There's new enemies and stuff for sure that they added in.
I do just love real quick the idea that there's like a basic UI improvement. You're just like, yeah. That's great.
Most of the what they in the game call gizmos, a lot of that stuff is new in terms of like the switch blocks or the collect a certain number of coins to unlock something, or the clear condition where it's like you have to collect 50 coins before you can clear it, or you have to defeat all the Goombas before you defeat the course.
Well, and before we move on too quickly from those, I think each one of those is a game changer, right? Like those on-off switches have driven some of the coolest experiences that I've played in the Course Maker thus far, you know? Or the clear pipes that are available, I think, in only the Super Mario Brothers.
The 3D world.
Yeah. Where you can throw items through that. Mm-hmm. So you can have these crazy scenarios where you throw an item because it has to go through the pipe and trigger something else while you're going through a different pipe.
Right.
It's a game changer, right? Like all of these little elements, or the, I think it's new, the hooks that come down that will grab you.
Hooks new too, yep.
And the hooks can also grab items, and they can be also set on tracks and be forced to do all kinds of crazy things. I've seen so many people glob onto that as a interesting concept and make for some just really cool, fun uses of those. And thematic uses, right? Like, I've seen a great one. I played a really awesome level today on the bus where you're on one level, and then above you is one of the weird, like, evil mushrooms, which I think is also new, where that's always hunting you, right?
Yep.
So it's always coming your way, and you need to move and activate switches in such a way for that little mushroom guy to follow with you. So it's almost like a weird escort quest where you are escorting that guy so that at certain moments he can help you through.
Mm-hmm.
Such a cool idea, super well realized. I haven't seen anything like it since, and it used all of the elements. It used the power switches. It used the hooks in really interesting ways. Super cool. I was just so pleased because it's totally unique.
I think that's the impressive thing about aspects like the hook and some of the environmental setups are they're not part of any established Mario game. Like, they're new to this game, but
the hooks have never existed in a Mario game?
Correct.
What? Is that real? Seriously?
Yeah. There's a bunch of stuff in this game that isn't, or it's mostly like the environmental stuff, or like, you know, the way that if you turn something from sun to moon, like the mechanics of the level will change, where it's, the stuff didn't really exist in any or even on a more basic level, there are certain items that just didn't exist in Super Mario Brothers 1 that did exist in World, and they have to translate them back.
Right.
But I think they just do a very graceful job of making those feel like integrated parts of the tool set.
Right.
And in a weird way, it's almost like this game can now inspire subsequent first party Mario games to use some of these tools that were custom built for this game. You know?
I mean, even some of the main story worlds, because in addition to, of course, being able to play any games that people make, there is like this weird story of like an abusive worker. Did you play the story at all? There's like an abusive foreman.
I played all of it because I wanted to just get a sense of it. I think you get an item or two or something to unlock. Yeah.
Well, those are great because those are also, they also sort of set up the foundation of what's new in the game in these bite-sized levels that really focus on that one mechanic, you know, like swinging through things, or their boss fight levels, or spotlighting the ability to have the rule set where you're not allowed to pass unless you get X number of coins, or you're, or taking no damage, for example. Those types of things, I think, you wouldn't really think about in really clever ways. At least I wouldn't, unless Nintendo prompted me with it with a level of their own design that was like, oh, here's a little new thing. Check it out. Isn't that cool? Now go to town.
Yeah. Yeah. The single player is both a fun, you know, pretty relaxed, but also pretty fun Mario game, but also it's a really nice tutorial that you can go back to as well.
I'm glad you're calling out the technical side of things as well, because I think it's really easy to think this is just a tool set. Like, it doesn't require any work for them to put out, but even above and beyond them making new levels, the gracefulness by which everything just sort of works and works in the way you expect. Yeah. I mean, as someone that is in spreadsheets and project management tools all day, it is not easy, you know?
Yeah. I mean, that's what I find this game fascinating as a piece of software, almost, like, in addition to a game, of course, but just like, because it is more of a software application. It's just the application of the software is to make Mario levels. Yep. And so you kind of have to evaluate it on the basis that you would evaluate a piece of productivity software.
Yeah. Yeah.
But actually, I've heard some people go back and forth as to some of the UI changes. You know, some people were positing that, and weirdly, like, I actually quite like the ring based navigational stuff. Like, I mm-hmm. think it's, for whatever reason, for me in my head, it's just more quickly visual, where it's like, okay, all the items are in this section, I'm gonna just quickly ring over to there. All the enemies are in this section, and the rows to me were more cluttered than the rings.
Yep.
But I can see that. I mean, the rings are also a concession to the fact that this game had to be functional in both docked and undocked mode, with or without a touchscreen.
Yeah.
And so I think they made some interesting and I think really smart just design choices for grouping things in a logical and fast way, and in also a way that saves your, you know, you can still pin items to your taskbar. You can still you know, have the most recently used ones there and then decide to pin them later. But I just think that they did some smart stuff, and I personally liked it, you know, versus some other people.
I agree with that. I think the logic behind like is with like, and it's a sort of radial thing.
Right.
And then even, you know, being able to pin things, that's like a small thing, but in a weird way, I feel like it's encouraging you to work with a limited tool set anyway. Like, it's probably not ideal for you to use every single type of enemy and every single type of gizmo available in the game, because you're going to get a level that feels like a hodgepodge, you know, where you threw everything in the kitchen sink into it, and it just doesn't feel like an actual Mario level. So I think it makes a lot of sense that, like, hey, here's a radial menu that groups things in an intelligent way. Pick the things that you want to use, lock them in place, and then you don't even have to worry about it. You know, then you can just get what you need. And to your point about being able to hold over an enemy to add wings or add a mushroom or change the qualities of a warp pipe or something, all of those things make a lot of sense. And if you're thinking from a perspective of there's this top row of basic things that you're using, and then it's just about augmenting those normal basic things, you know?
Exactly. And those are all modifiers of the object.
Yeah, and being able to group drag, I don't know if that was, I presume with a stylus in the first one you could do that.
Yes, and then
just group cloning and stuff. Like, all of the things of using the bumpers to do that on the go, I think has worked really well, for me at least.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit, because I feel like the biggest thing, one of my biggest pleasant surprises was how usable this game is with just touch versus a capacitive stylus. So, like, tell me about your experience. Like, have you been using a stylus? Have you been using finger? Like, what's been the breakdown for you?
I've been using my big old meaty finger, Scott. Yeah, I was
pleasantly surprised by how responsive it was.
Yeah, I was concerned as well. And besides, sometimes it's difficult working in the, like, tight spaces at the very top of a level or the bottom of a level. Yeah. I had no problems with it at all, and I think it made a lot of sense. And I think the ability to have the copy and cloning and group things on the bumpers felt really good, because I would always have my hand on that while moving the character with the left thumbstick. So I essentially didn't need my hand on the right one very often, especially when I had my favorite items pulled at the top. And in a weird way, it felt a bit more natural, like the way an artist might work on a Wacom tablet or something.
Yep.
You know, like, I don't need my second hand, because it's pretty easy to quickly navigate what's on screen.
I think one thing that they buried a little bit in the UI was the ability to zoom out and zoom in. Have you used that functionality much?
I have, but I don't recall ever being taught it. I mean, I think you just expect that to work on screens of any kind, you know, and it works, so.
That and what was the other thing that I thought was clever that they I don't feel like they did much of. It was the being able to hide the palette. So if you are in those really close quarters scenarios, like you can press the X button and it just gets rid of the UI, but the tools still work the same way.
Oh, that's funny. I actually didn't know that that was an option, but I knew that sometimes it would disappear and I would be like, what?
it tries to be smart when you're like close to an edge and it hides one of the panes of tools, but mm-hmm. you can just press the X button to swipe them all away and then... But whatever item you still have out is functional, and all the shoulder buttons are still functional. It's just that it hides the palette.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, which I found pretty useful in those, like you said, because even when you are using your hand, you know, your own hand starts to get in the way visually, so you have to, like, zoom out a little bit to do it.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
I think that has been... I was kind of worried, and, you know, like, I feel like both you and I are the people that probably have a couple of those capacitive styluses laying around our house for whatever reason, just because we're dorks.
Yeah.
And so like, and I tried it with both, and you know, the pen is nice for, you know, precision. Like I definitely am more precise with the pen, but it's nowhere near a deal breaker. Like the first level that I published, I did almost exclusively on the train going to and from work.
Yeah. The level I made was exclusively on the bus. So
Yeah. Which it's cool, it's impressive, and also like that use case of finally being untethered from the house and being able to treat this as you would treat a journaling exercise or something is a really cool thing.
Yeah, totally. And I've really enjoyed just the creative act of doing that, like on the bus, you know. Yep. Because it is really, and maybe this explains why most of my levels are just incomplete tests. But you can set up really quick tests and quickly like iterate around ideas and just throw a couple of objects in there, quick click play and go to town and sort of experience it and test it out, which is really neat. I really like the ability to download levels before I leave home as well. It's become like my now nightly or every other night ritual of just downloading.
Tell me your workflow for that, because I want to do the same thing, but I'm not quite sure how the discovery should work. Like, how do you actually figure out which to download? And then,
well, so the very first thing I did was just Google "Cool Mario Maker 2 levels online,
right?
And start following. More importantly, start following the creators. So now, when I go in and I click the star, I can see all of the levels that people have added since I've last played them, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I just automatically download all of the new ones to my queue. And then I'll also go into the popular levels and just scroll through any that I haven't played and download those as well.
That's smart. I should Google those like top creators or whatever and then just do that to queue it up.
Well, I realized
like I had forgotten to do that today and had nothing new.
Well, I've also started to organize the rows of my Mario Maker level because I know that most of the popular ones are pretty short, right? Like I can probably get through, I don't know, purely off the top of my head, like 8 to 10 normal levels of Mario Maker on like a single bus ride. But I also know that a single Dan Reichert level can fuck right off and it takes me forever. And so I have like a few rows and then there's a gap, and that gap signifies like these are the levels below. This are the levels that I are, you know, I downloaded new, I want to give a try and we'll play and have fun. The rows above it, which is basically like a row and a half right now, are levels that are super hard and I haven't solved, but I want to go back and try to figure it out and try again.
The pain zone and the pleasure zone.
I mean, in a weird way, that's my one complaint, is I think that the course TV or course bot or whatever that shows you all of the levels, there's not a really easy way to organize that into like a logical set of levels. I know there's a limit, so maybe it doesn't make sense that you'd be able to do that, but it'd be really nice from my point of view to be able to sort of track or permanently save some of the levels that I think are a bit more interesting.
Yeah.
I also don't know if they took this out, but I feel like I recall being able to download other people's levels and then edit them.
They did. They took that out.
Why do you think that is?
I have no clue. And actually, this kind of leads me into some of the like some of my criticisms with this. And I think I feel like my criticisms are pointed because the rest of the package is so good.
Yeah.
And something like that, which is not only a cool thing just conceptually to see how people put it together, but it's also, it's one of the more like pedagogical things that they took out. How are you supposed to learn how to be better without dismantling and reverse engineering some of the levels that you love most?
Yep.
And so I just don't, I really do not understand the impulse to remove that feature. And there's ways to defend against cheating and stuff. I just don't get it.
Yeah. Well, especially for the slew of levels that are sort of the fun auto scrollers.
Yeah.
Where you just basically run from left to right and maybe jump a few times. But for the most part, what you're there to appreciate is the wacky things that are automatically happening because you're just running past, right? They create a sort of Rube Goldberg device in the background, quite literally above your frame of view. So there's a lot going on. You know, there's sound effects and buttons and switches being triggered, but you can't see it. And there's no way to ever see it unless you're able to download it. And so it kind of makes knowing how to make up a similar level kind of impossible.
That's how I remember for Mario Maker 1, that's how I learned how people were doing music. I was like, okay, so basically they made what is functionally a tiny piano up in the upper left corner of their level, and they're timing enemies to fall on it like you would press keys. And I would have never known that had I not been able to open up the creator section on a level I downloaded. And it's just not here. It's like, what? Like, what happened?
Yeah, it's bizarre. Or even it removes, I don't know if people did this, but I like the idea, but it removes the option to then take pieces of a level that somebody else made and add on to it or update it or change it, you know? It removes your ability to sort of change up and add like a different spin on it, right? Like,
as a member of Generation Remix, I need to be able to chop and screw.
In a weird way, like, I think it would be cool to take someone's base level and then add a warp pipe and make your own, you know?
Yeah.
And build on top of it, because you can just rebuild a whole second warp pipe level, you know?
Yeah.
You can invite people to do that in Mario Maker 1, and you can't do that in this one. And that, you're right, it's very weird. I have no idea why they removed it, other than, I guess, like you alluded to, maybe people were cheating so that they could get, like, I don't know, sweet speedrun times.
That's what I was thinking. It's like, but exactly. Even so, you still have to execute. So I don't understand, like, what. Yeah, I mean, that going back to the analogy of treating this like a more traditional piece of software, there are just certain decisions where I want to understand the product manager's vision of this game. Where if you're thinking about a tool, the frame of mind is, I am a blank. Right. And I want to blank. And so it's like, I am a player and I want to know where people are dying in my level. And it's like, so one way of doing that is like the little X's that show where people die in the level. But it's 2019. How come we can't watch replays of people who play our levels?
Yeah. Yeah. Or even just, you know, the heat map where you can see where they moved.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Follow a path. Maybe it's, you know, whatever. Maybe full replays are too expensive to do or something. But it just, it's in, when you look at other games, whether it's sports games or racing games or similar games that where there is a social component, there are just more elegant ways of showing what other players are doing. And this is the ultimate version of that, where like you, the whole point is to share levels and watch people play them, and to not have those types of features is just kind of strange.
Yeah. Especially with friends. Like, it might be really neat to watch your playthrough of my level and laugh as you, like, die to something dumb, you know?
Exactly. Or even for, again, going back to the teaching aspect, if you really want to get better at creating whatever, a challenging Mario level, an easy Mario level, an elegant one, you need to have real-life playtesters and look at people's responses and reactions to it, and having that live data would just be so much more powerful for people's learning.
Well, I saw people talking about, you know, tips for building Mario Maker levels in this, like, huge Twitter thread that was super good and really informative. And of course, as you would expect from a game designer, one of the major lessons was playtest, playtest, playtest.
Yep.
And now the reason people playtest with people outside of development is you get so used to it that you start thinking that things that are not normal are normal, or things that are not easy are easy, because you're just familiar with it. There's no way for me to invite someone else to playtest it. You can't, for example, even now, I can't invite you to join my match and play with you, right? Yeah. Or I can, like, watch you play, because they haven't implemented, and they said they will, but they have not yet implemented the ability to play multiplayer with friends. So you don't really have any tool to take the best lesson from designers to heart, right? Which is mm-hmm. to playtest your actual level.
I mean, even that, like, if you go into, like, the more development mindset where how come you can't have an invite-only level or, you know, a pre-production level that people can get into, and then you turn it live and, like, okay, now it's generally available. You're creating a piece of software but not really treating it like a piece of software, which is a strange... There are just some rough spots where it would be better served with a more robust development mindset.
It would be so cool to be able to play your levels in progress or see you evolve a level and change it over time. Yeah, that would be really neat.
I mean, and also I will say, just part of this is probably just Nintendo's overall missteps with social networking in general, where why even have a system? You know, Nintendo has an OS level friends list that is in no way integrated with Mario Maker. There's a separate friends list for Mario Maker and a separate me and a separate code and everything. It's like, what? Like, why can't I immediately see your levels by virtue of the fact that I'm already friends with you on the OS level?
Right.
It's crazy. Like, why? Yeah, why? Like, I don't know. Get it. Like, why even have that? And so now you just have these, like, this whole crazy set of friends lists that is duplicative of the thing you already baked into your operating system. It's like, guys, what is going on here?
Yeah, it's bizarre, man. I don't know. I also saw that if you're familiar with, there's a Mario Maker player by the name of Grand Pooh Bear. Mm-hmm. is what he goes by. He does, like, crazy Kaizo speed runs. Mm-hmm. And I started following him recently because he worked around this by essentially creating levels specifically to teach, which is cool. It's not something I saw in the first Mario Maker. And as you said, it can be difficult to understand how certain things work. He was going at it from the perspective of, I know a lot of the reason people watch Mario Maker on YouTube is because people like to see just crazy Kaizo levels.
Yeah.
And those can be really overwhelming. And while you might be able to find a Kaizo level and play it, if you're not familiar playing in that high level of play,
right,
it can be instantly overwhelming and not actually conducive to learning. So he started making levels that would teach you those specific shots in a way that would let you reset that particular lesson over and over and over again. So for example, throwing a shell off of a wall and then bouncing on top of that shell, right? Like, that's a common trick that people use in Kaizo levels. So he made a level in Mario Maker that taught various iterations of that. And each time you passed one section, you would get a little flag, and then you'd be able to then play that second section where you're trying an advanced version of that, right? That's super so clever. Smart. Yeah, I mean, amazing. Mad props to the guy. Yeah. I think it's a great idea. It's a really great way of teaching people how to play in a way that Mario Maker isn't really conducive for, right? Like, how do you... You can't search, for example, for a level that's tagged lessons, right? Or educational.
Right.
Which I would argue you probably should be able to do, because I think there's so many cool things that you can learn through play. Yeah. But on top of all of that, what was disheartening is he got banned from... Or he got his level taken down... one of his Kaizo levels taken down from Mario Maker for unknown reasons, and per your point about how Nintendo still seems to be in the dark ages when it comes to, you know, making things work online, he has no idea why his level was taken down, you know?
Jeez.
And it's like, he had this, like, heartfelt thing on Twitter where it's like, look, I you know, commit my life to this, I make a bunch of videos for people, I live stream, I spend a ton of time making this level, and then to get it deleted without knowing why is super frustrating, and it makes me want to not play Mario Maker, you know?
Yeah.
That's a fucking bummer when just that general inability to get things right that are community-facing but nevertheless important have real impacts when you think about the types of people that are making your player environment friendlier and more accessible across the board.
Yeah. Yeah, it's... I almost wonder what... what happens after this? Because it was clear that there was always going to be a Mario Maker 2 because it was a huge critical hit on the Wii U. It's just that no one had a Wii U. So it's logical to, like...
I had a Wii U.
Yeah, I mean, besides weirdos like us, I mean, very few people had Wii U's, but this was a stellar game, and so it makes sense that they would put another game out. But, like, what does Mario Maker 3 look like? I mean, and one would... I would argue that you just need to double down on the community and developer friendliness, treating your customers as developers,
yes,
and approaching them like that, which is like listening to what are the problems they're having, yeah, and then listen to those use cases and bring, yeah, solutions versus just adding on features. Well, and
you know, and how do we surface the best levels, and how do we arm people to
exactly
spread the word about like what are the great experience, like how do you find the Mario Maker experiences that are right for you and keep having those experiences and share them with others and become a maker yourself?
Yeah. And broaden that out. I mean, it would be cool to have, if you are on Nintendo's, you know, social or community or marketing team, it seems like a great thing would be to just create a little mini convention around Mario Makers.
Yep.
Where it's like, just, we're going to have people showcase the, you know, tips and tricks. We're going to have, you know, we're going to have a tournament to see who can do the endless longest. We're going to have talks. Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's just such a, it is such a developer conference-esque approach that it seems like it would be such a great fit. It's just, I don't know if they're thinking about it in terms of a platform versus a game.
Or if they're empowered to from Japan, right?
Exactly. And that's what I mean. Like, this seems like something that would come directly out of Nintendo of America, but only if Nintendo of Japan didn't, you know, shut it down.
It's such a cool opportunity because, you know, plenty of people have come out. Like, you could download RPG Maker if you want to, right? But it's never been packaged in a way like this. Right. For a brand that is so recognizable, and you have just such this instant fan base, and people can make levels on the go. Like, it's such a cool thing, you know, that I just want the best for it, you know.
It's so rare that you get a set of tools that are extremely robust but also extremely simple and also highly accessible.
Yeah.
So you just have this crazy confluence of things that let you create extremely complicated and polished end results with of extremely basic tool set, and it just makes makes your addressable audience so large.
Yeah.
And that's a hard thing to get a hold on unless you're thinking about it in a certain like platform centric way versus, hey, this is just one video game that has a build a stage creator, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
So what is next for you in Mario Maker?
So right now, like I said, the experimental level that I'm playing around with the most is the power blocks. I really want to make a Mario Maker level that is just like gates where you have to jump through. So that's what I'm currently working on. And I made my summer level.
Yes, which you played. Summer levels. Totally. I thought that was a pleasant level. I went through it. The slides were very fun. The water was fun without being obnoxious.
I hate water levels. I was shocked that I was like one of the first uploaded levels has water in it.
Well, it was a combination because there were platforms in there and you had a water slide motif throughout.
Well, my favorite element was, so it was themed around water parks, and I added a kiddie pool with Bowser Jr. and then Bowser Dad watching over him.
I thought that was funny too. As I was swinging across it, you know, and with the hook or whatever, that was a clever thing.
Good times. And you made Suns Out, Guns Out, which I think
Suns Out, Guns Out.
Such a great name, and also an extremely difficult level. Like, I had a really hard time with that level.
How did you? So I knew it was going to be difficult, but I tried to put enough in there to like keep people going. But how did you actually go through the level? Because there's multiple ways of going through it.
I do what I always do when there's a sort of bullet hell scenario in Mario Maker, and that is to try to stay above everything by, and maybe I'd bring this on myself, because when I think about it now, it actually sounds way harder than taking a normal route, but it's just bouncing constantly on the bullets.
Oh, yeah.
To sort of, like, daisy chain my way around there. Yeah. So I know...
Did you get to the inverted pyramid in the middle of the level with the pipes?
No.
So in the middle of the level, there's basically a V of green pipes.
Yeah.
And so if you're in the middle, there's a bunch of guns all pointing inward. But if you go into the middle pipe, you go to another part of the stage that gives you both a checkpoint and a way of getting another mushroom.
Oh, you know what? I actually think I did on a second playthrough, or like one of the times that I died. Because I do remember going through the pipe in another world. And I was like, oh, I had no idea this was there. Because I had gotten very far and then died right before the end. And so the second playthrough, I found it and I was like, oh, super cool. And then I saw the flag, yeah.
And at the very end, was your path to the end across the like pink donuts and the green pipes?
Yes.
So there's another way of getting up. So like when you're when you pass the kind of inverted V, there are the bullet bills that are bouncing on the note blocks.
Yeah.
So if you go up there instead of down, you can get to another pipe that that gets you into a puzzle section of the level. And if you solve the puzzle, it just dumps you out right at the goal. Like, sweet. You bypass all of that bullshit, like, at the very
end. I'm not
end.
A great puzzle solver, so I feel like I chose correctly.
The puzzle isn't bad. Like, the way that I set it up was, it dumps you out into a level where it's kind of like, it's a tiny enclosed room with a couple of bullet bills, but one of them continually shoots mushrooms and the other two shoot seeker bullets at you.
Nice.
And then there's four little bob-ombs that float down from the ceiling, and one of them has a key inside of it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, man, I love the key stuff and the red coins. That's also a game changer. Yeah, super cool.
It's just cool. Like, they added a lot of stuff where it's like you can much more easily have... You can just make your level so much more multifaceted in terms of going from screen to screen, or like having those little puzzle rooms and stuff.
Yeah, like little discrete experiences. I played a level I was talking to you about before we started recording, but where it was like gladiatorial combat, you know, built on keys, where you go from one room to another, like fighting different enemies. It's a super cool idea. I love it.
Yeah. It's something that I think, because of the portability, it will have more legs than the first game had for me, just because it's a... You know, it's easy to pick it up, and you can iterate on it as you go. And then you can, once you're home, you can give it a more serious run through or something. But like, I'm looking forward to a pretty long tail on this game.
Yeah, for sure. And I definitely finding myself hooked making levels while I'm on the commute. Yeah. And I think even the gap between, you know, making it in the morning and then making, you know, looking at the level again the following day is kind of a healthy way. It means that I'm going to be very slow making levels, but I think they're going to be better for it because I have this sort of like built-in time to reflect and think and experiment.
Last question. What do you think the last extra game style? There's a very obvious gap in the game style palette. You know, you can choose Mario 1 or 3 or World.
Oh.
And then beneath it, the Super Mario 3D World, which, by the way, has like a whole different tool set that you can't even have cross-compatibility. Like, but there is a very conspicuous empty space next to it.
For DLC. You know what I think would be rad is Woolly World.
Oh my god.
Wouldn't that be so cool if like everything transferred to Wool?
I was thinking that they'll finally implement Super Mario Brothers 2.
Oh, that's probably...
That's a crazy amount.
I mean, that's even crazier than Woolly World. That's like canonically no one talks about that.
I mean, that's the thing, and it has a fully different rule set, right? Like, you have to grab things instead of jump on them, so like it couldn't be cross-compatible, so it would have to live in that lower palette. But if ever there was time to do it, like, that's the space where you'd put it.
I mean, it's not going to be that'd be fucking cool if it was Odyssey. Man, that's what Mario Maker 3 is. Actual three-dimensional level design.
But that's the thing. Like, having demonstrated that they can so eloquently put together a tile set and a UI to make sense of it, if someone were to do that, it seems like Nintendo would be a good candidate. You know, someone who could make, like, an elegant 3D platformer maker engine. I mean, it seems like they would be in a good position to do so.
Yeah. Well, in either case, I'm happy with what I have now. It'll take me a long-ass time to get bored of Mario Maker 2, and by then they'll have DLC, so...
I can make shitty levels in 3D just like I can make shitty levels in 2D.
All day.
Shitty levels. Another question. Do you ever boo people's levels?
I've only booed one level because it had, like, a lot of cheap death tricks. I was like, come on. This is fucking 2019, all right? I don't need invisible blocks that are like full of bees or whatever.
That's what I've done too. Or when there were levels that were just clearly just thrown together to be obnoxious, like, oh, here's a pipe that's so long it takes 60 seconds to get through it or whatever. Yeah. It's like, who the fuck do you think you are? Kojima? Like, boo.
Yeah, I definitely like more levels than I boo, though, for sure.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Got to put out that positivity. But
have you tried
I find it interesting that they even put a boo in there.
Have you tried the endless mode?
I have. That's what I was doing yesterday.
Why you're, see, that's why you're encountering booable levels, because they're just totally pulling from the hat, you know?
Yeah, like, and I wanted to see. I was like, I wonder what the general random assortment is like. And it is an interesting combination of levels that are extremely well thought out and levels that were like, oh, you were clearly drunk at 3 a.m. doing this.
Yeah, that's pretty great.
Cool. Well, I guess we'll leave it there for now. ExperiencePoints@gmail.com is our email address.
And ExperiencePoints.net is our Maker Studio. Don't sue us, Maker Studio. Come on down. Bring your friends. Design us a level. If you've designed a level, send us your level code so we can play it, more importantly.
Actually, yeah, we should have done that at the top of the show, but I guess we should do it now. Like, how do we share out our
And I levels? I have it. I have mine up.
Okay. You maybe read yours, and hold then on. I'll
I don't
read
have
mine
up. I lied, Scott.
Okay, never mind. We can I'll edit read. This. Yeah, I'll read mine if I can. Okay, so my maker ID is SWDHY51HG.
I don't know how to find that. How don't you find your maker ID?
You go to the. See, this is again. This is the freaking
overview.
If you click on your. I don't know what it's called. If you go into your profile.
Designing your character, a blast. With the different poses, I love it. How about I just read you the course, the only course I've made so far?
I can find yours, actually.
Okay, then in that case, go ahead and share mine.
I friended you. So if I just... see, this is the craziest thing where it's like you have to go through a few different like menus to even get to your friends and such. Let me say, like... Because I starred you. You're one of my preferred makers, so
thanks,
I just
bud.
Go there... it's like who is this guy? Okay.
How do you like my sweet style, by the way, with the cannon dress?
I do. So when I was choosing my pose, I was at first doing the like cheeky pose like you, but it was so irritating that I was like, I can't even look at myself when I'm doing this.
My goal is to make the most irritating character I can possibly find.
All right, George's ID. This is George's maker ID. Is JH4. TKGDRG.
Sweet. Well, I'll also put this in the show notes, so if anybody wants to do it that way, maybe it's easier.
Nintendo, look at what you've reduced us to. Figure out your social shit.
Well,
come
this
on.
Is great. Now I feel like I'm more obligated to actually finish levels, so back to work.
Oh, man. All right, everyone. Well, with that, until next time, thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.
Ciao. I